originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone. Good afternoon. And once again, welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. This is Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, coming to you from our Lexington, Kentucky studios. You, of course, are listening live throughout North America on Sirius 219 XM Channel 201, or you're tuned in to our free live streaming or the archived podcast of this program on our HRN website. You're doing that at horseracingradio.net, and really happy to have you along for the ride here tonight because this is going to be a fun show. Tonight's guest has spent more than 30 years in the racing industry. He began his training career in 2005 and currently has saddled 1,833 winners with purse earnings of more than $60 million, and I'm very proud to say that he joins me on today's show less than 24 hours after being named the 2019 Maryland Trainer of the Year. Please join me in welcoming trainer Mike Trombetta to Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton here today. Mike, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
Yeah, congratulations on that tremendous honor last night.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun. Our group works really hard at it, and it's nice to be recognized.
If I'm not mistaken, is this the second time you've received the Trainer of the Year in Maryland?
Yeah, I believe we did this in 2005 as well. So it's been quite a few years, but it was nevertheless nice to get.
I read an article someplace as I was getting ready for the program, and you had said in that article that you wanted to put your experience to use in helping Maryland racing, which was, you know, which certainly even today is on the upswing. And you wanted to see it continue to improve and do right by the horsemen and the track management and everyone involved. Do you still view yourself in that light, Mike?
Yeah, I think you read that as part of a little paragraph that we had to put out there for when we were running for our MTHA. And I'm a current board member of our MTHA. And, you know, we just want to do whatever we can to better the environment for all of us that are trying to make Maryland racing as good as it should be.
We have been coming to Maryland to broadcast races since 2008. Our very first national radio broadcast of the Preakness here on the network was the 2008 Preakness. And every year we make a trip now for the Maryland Million Card, get a chance to put that out there on national radio for people. And the way we are treated when we come to Maryland, Mike, is second to none.
That's very nice to hear.
Yeah, and in the program. Look, the program, the industry, things are moving in the right direction, aren't they?
I believe they are. You know, we have year-round racing. That's very important. A lot of us, you know, we can do our jobs and not have to move all over the country other than when we want to for, you know, wintertime racing in Florida and things of that nature. So it's got a lot to offer.
Yeah, it certainly does. Mike Trombetta, my special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Mike, let's do this. We're going to spend about 30 minutes on the program here tonight. You have a busy schedule, so we'll spend about 30 minutes. We're going to replay this entire 30-minute interview in the second half of the program for the full-hour show here tonight. So let's start at the beginning. Take me back to the beginning and talk about getting involved with racing. This is something that's been in your blood from a very young age.
Yeah, my father, you know, would frequent the races, and when I was a teenager, he stepped out and bought a few racehorses with a friend of his, and I got some exposure to how it all worked and was a fan of the sport at a very young age, and, you know, I was able to get backstretch experience liked what it was all about. It had a good feel to it. Started working on the backstretch, you know, as a groom and things of that nature. Continued to enjoy it. And when I was 18 years old, I, you know, went out and started trying to train some horses. And, you know, been at it ever since.
Every trainer that's come on this show over the years, Mike, has had a different story. Some similar, some completely different than others, as to how they got to where they are today. And you talk about at the age of 15 being a hot walker, then a groom, you know, being around the barns. That experience of starting at that particular level and then working your way up, how much has that benefited you today?
I think it benefited us greatly. Obviously, we've never taken any of it for granted, but, you know, to start off with bottom of the barrel claimers and try to make something good out of them, it challenges you more than just someone handing you something that's already made and you know, that's nice in its own right and taking it from there. So we got a lot of experience the hard way. And when I started out, I can remember the bottom level claimers running for $2,500 at Charlestown. So, you know, I date back long enough to know when the winner's share of those lower level races was, believe it or not, under $1,000.
Wow. Wow. And I didn't you have to kind of take on a second job working with your brother at one point too?
Did that for 15 years.
Did you really?
Did it for 15 years while I was growing my business. I still had a family to take care of and a home to pay for. So, you know, I did it whatever it took to get through. And it wasn't until 2005 or so that I had built the horse racing business to a point that, you know, I could separate the two and continue on with the horses.
How scary was that to make that decision? You talk about having a family to support, and now you say, okay, we're going to make a go of it, burn all bridges, and I'm going to try training horses. Was that a scary decision?
It was, but I had the privilege of knowing that if I didn't do as well as I needed to, that, you know, I had learned enough that I could go back in time and do what I was doing previously. So it was a little scary, but it all worked out well.
Is your brother still doing the construction company?
Yeah, his company has grown and it's become rather large. So he's continued in his own right. And we have horses together with my dad and we enjoy it racing our stable as well.
Talk a little bit about that for a minute, because I've told so many people, my wife and I have owned pieces of horses and we've been fortunate to win with several of them, but I've told so many people that aren't involved in the sport that winning a horse race is like a feeling that you have to experience, and it's like no other feeling you're going to get in the world. So to win one alongside your brother and your father, a horse that you train, what's that feeling like?
It's good, and it brings you close together. It's something you have in common, and it's a very enjoyable experience. And there's a lot of work that goes into it, and oftentimes a lot of expenses. But the rewards are really fun when they come back to you.
Well, I mentioned those 1,833 winners that you saddled. You've come a long way since the days of Atlantic City in 1986.
Yeah, it's amazing how fast 30 years goes by, though.
Oh, I'm sure. When you think back to those early days, and you think, and I bring up Atlantic City in 1986 because that's where you saddled your very first winner. When you think back to those days, sitting here today, a winner of more than 1,800 races, did you ever imagine that was possible?
You would hope that it is, but it's unlikely. I feel that I've been very fortunate. I've been blessed to be around good people. It took a long time for people to entrust us with their horses, but we've always worked hard. And once things started going well, and it took many years, but then opportunities started coming. And when they did, we tried to take full advantage of them.
There are probably people listening to this show right now that, you know, young people that are thinking about getting involved in the sport as a trainer. What advice do you give to them, Mike, and what advice do you give to them about building a business when they first start?
you have to work hard. It's very challenging. You have to take good care of your horses. You have to take good care of your people that take care of your horses. And you can't lose faith that something good may come along. And you just have to really stick it out. There's going to be times where it's challenging, but you have to just keep applying the work ethic to it and hope you get a few breaks along the way.
Yeah, you got breaks. You got breaks early on in your career. And then, of course, you start to get big horses like Sweet Northern Saint, who comes along and takes you to the Kentucky Derby. We'll talk about that in a minute. But it doesn't happen without the owners that, as you just mentioned a few moments ago, start to trust you with their horses. Tell me about some of those owners that have supported you over the years.
Oh, it's been a long list. It really has been a long list. But, you know, the breaks that you get early on are the big ones because, you know, somebody's got to take the initial step to give you horses when you don't really have many. And those are the ones you appreciate most looking back.
What's the key to being a good horse trainer?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
What's the key to being a good horse trainer, Mike?
I think you have to pay close attention. The details are important. The horses have their own language. You know, you can kind of tell when they're happy and when they're not. You just, you know, you have to be very vigilant and watch what they're doing and pay attention to the feedback that you're getting from them.
Yeah, they'll almost talk to you without being able to talk, won't they?
Somewhat. And all those little details are what make up, you know, whether or not you'll be successful.
Trainer Mike Trombetta, my special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Again, if you miss any portion of the first half of the show, stay with me because the second half of the show, I'm going to replay this entire visit with Mike for you. So you don't have to worry about missing a thing. We'll have it for you coming up in the second half of the show. Mike, let's spend a little time talking about Sweet Northern Saint and that experience in 2006 because it's such a big part of your story. He takes you to your first Kentucky Derby. He was actually sent off as the 5-1 favorite against Barbaro that year. We know he finished seventh that day. Wasn't meant to be, but he ran a pretty darn good race, and that had to be one special experience for you.
Well, it was our first Derby, so anytime you get an opportunity to get for a horse to take you that far, it's special. Can't begin to tell you how much notoriety we were able to get from having that experience, and that kind of recognition is basically something that, you know, you can't buy. So it was a lot of fun. It's been quite a while since then, but I believe that it just does wonders for your occupation.
For a trainer that is on the Derby trail for the first time, especially with a horse like Sweet Northern Saint, who is so highly regarded, what is that experience like, Mike?
Well, that was truly special because usually you get a chance to run a horse in the Derby. You're one of 20, and they, you know, how do I say it? I mean, they're all in there doing the same thing, and we're all trying to take the same chance. To have one that comes there as the favorite, you're getting a lot more attention than most of the rest of the group.
Was that somewhat overwhelming?
A little bit. It was. And, you know, expectations are high. I mean, it's a big deal. So it was a little bit to take in, but it was nevertheless a great experience.
How'd you deal with that pressure, Mike? Did you have a release valve? Were you able to get away from it for a little bit? Or were you just kind of in it and just said, okay, let's do this thing?
You know, you find yourself working to try to get in it. And in our case, we won the Illinois Derby in a good fashion the 3 or 4 weeks, whatever it was, before the Derby. That just, it immediately hits you is that, oh, I'm in this thing now. I've been able to get what I needed to, and let's make plans because we're on to Kentucky. And at that point, it becomes very sobering.
I mentioned that he finished seventh, but I also mentioned that he ran a good race, and it was a really good race. He turned for home. I believe he was, what, probably about fourth at the top of the stretch, so he was in good position. Describe your feelings and your emotions at that point.
Well, it's just like anybody else. The emotions and the feelings are up and down. We didn't get away good in the Derby, and we had to kind of fight for position, and we moved up on the rail, which I think on that particular day wasn't the greatest of spots to be in, but it was the only real choice that we had, and I believe that's why it was available. And I think it just, to get back into the race, I think we had to use a lot of horse to where, is if we'd have had a little bit of a better shot early on, we would have placed better. And I do believe that particular year, Barbaro was beyond extraordinary, and I think that it was a pretty darn solid year as far as the depth of the field.
How about the emotions of finishing second in the Preakness 2 weeks later, especially considering the Barbaro situation with that Preakness Stakes?
Yeah, the Barbaro situation was just awful. That took all the enjoyment out of it for everybody because our hearts were with him, and we knew that it was a huge issue. But to come to Maryland where I started out and raced and worked, it was kind of special to me at that time. It was just as important to me to do good in Maryland as it would have been to do in Kentucky.
Well, you'd have to wait 13 years to get back to the Kentucky Derby again with win. That was last year. He finishes ninth. What was the experience like last year as opposed to the first time?
The experience last year was just a very wet experience. We had tons of rain, and I really think that played a big part in the outcome for a lot of us. At that point, everything changed. The track wasn't in the best of shape. That race is hard enough to run in good conditions, to run in bad conditions. It just makes it more complicated. And, you know, I think it just kind of took us out of our comfort zone.
Well, you can always say that you defeated the eventual Kentucky Derby winner a few days before the race in a workout.
Yeah, that was a bit bizarre, but we all survived that as well.
Yeah, talk about that for a minute. People may not realize what I'm referring to there. Tell me that story.
Well, it was just circumstances. If I remember right, you know, the final workout for the Derby there, I flew our jockey in to breeze our horse. I shipped along a workmate so he would have a horse to breeze with. And, you know, you think about all these things and try to coordinate them, and lo and behold, we get out on the track. And if I remember right, it was Mr. Mott's set started off at 5/8. We were starting out at the half. And lo and behold, they all ran into each other going down the backside, and now they're working four abreast across the turn. And it went particularly well, considering what it could have been. Fortunately, no harm was done, and looking back at it, we may have helped Bill win a Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, very much so. You might have had a hand in that. Have you ever seen him at the track and told him that?
Well, I'm sure he was going through the same anxiety as we were as it was unfolding.
You know, that just shows you how difficult it is to win that race, Mike. Think about what you went through with Sweet Northern Saint. You said he didn't get away well. You had him perfectly prepared for the Kentucky Derby. Here comes Bill Mott, a guy who's in the Hall of Fame, has won countless graded stakes. This one had always eluded him. And somehow he wins it in that fashion that he did last year. That is an almost impossible race to win, isn't it?
It's a challenging race to win for sure. I don't know if there's anything any tougher in our country. I think you got to have a lot of things going. You got to have a good horse, and you got to have some luck.
Well, you're hoping to get back there again this year with a horse by the name of Independence Hall. The Grade 3 Nashua winner suffered his very first defeat in the Grade 3 Sam F. Davis at Tampa Bay Downs this past Saturday. What'd you take away from that performance?
You know, it was a good race. The winner ran extremely well. We were a little vulnerable, I believe, for the fact that we were chasing a hot pace at the time, and you know, probably left us with just a little bit more work to do than we could handle, and subsequently we finished second. The good news for us is that he appears to have come out of the race in good order, and on to the next one.
Yeah, how do you rate a race like that, Mike, where you're 2.5 lengths behind the winner, Sol Volante, but you're 11.25 lengths clear of the third-place finisher? So the two horses, Sol Volante and your horse, ran big, big races. How do you rate it as a trainer?
I just rate it as a little bit of an anomaly, so to speak. You generally don't have that much separation in a dirt race in the early stages of it. And it was something different than you would normally see. And I think it's part of racing. I think that's just the stuff that comes with the game that we play. And, you know, sometimes it works out really well and sometimes it doesn't. And for us, not so great. And for the winner, it worked out really good. He was in the right spot at the right time, and he capitalized on it on a day when he was ready to run a big race. And, you know, hats off to him. They were able to get the win.
You were quoted last year at the Derby earlier in the week. At some point, you were quoted as saying that we're all still learning about our three-year-olds. It's one test after another until you get here. Is that your approach with going down the Derby trail? It's just one test after another?
Yeah, it is. It's different tracks. It's different distances. In some cases, it's different riders. It's very unusual that you're able to do the same thing more than once without moving on to the next step. And I think in the life of a racehorse, that's a pretty challenging thing to ask.
There are going to be people that look at that race and say, well, Independence Hall got beat, so he must have failed the test. It sounds to me like you think, it's okay. He passed that first test.
Yeah, I think there's good and bad to take out of any experience. And I think the in this horse's case, you know, he's run four times and he's only lost once. You know, I think that's a pretty good hand to play.
What's next for him?
We're not sure. We're going to have those conversations here real shortly. First step's getting back out on the track, make sure he's doing well, and then start to throw that around a little bit and make some plans.
Is there anything that Mike Trombetta takes away from being on the Derby trail a couple of times before and getting a horse to the first Saturday in May that you're using to help you with Independence Hall?
It just helps you know what's out there and gives you an idea and experience of the best way to maybe get to where you want to go. It's just like anything else you do in life. If you get to do it, you know, repeat it a few times, it just aids you and helps you in hopefully making the right decisions.
Do you spend much time, Mike, handicapping and watching replays of the other three-year-olds that are out there?
Not as much as you would think. You're going to have to face them sooner or later. It's hard to pick and choose. I mean, you can try to do that along the way a little bit if you want, if you have a choice of doing one race or another, but the main focus is making sure that your horse is as good as he should be when he needs to be.
Mike Trombetta here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. If you weren't training horses, Mike, what else do you think you might be doing?
God only knows. I've been doing this for so long. It's a good thing I'm able to still do it.
You might want to think about moving to Canada because you saddled two Grade 1 winners in your career. Both of those have been at Woodbine.
Yeah, that's a kind of a ridiculous stat. I don't know how that's happened quite like that. I'm glad it's happened. They've been very nice to us up there when we go up and run, and we've had a lot of fun doing it. I don't have a good explanation for that.
Yeah, pretty bizarre. The first one was in 2012 with the Nearctic Stakes. Next Question was the winner, and then you came back last year and took the Highlander with Wet Your Whistle. Let's go back to Next Question for a minute. What do you remember about that day with that horse?
That was a unique thing. We really liked him a lot. If I remember right, we ran in a first level allowance race at Saratoga, and he had one of those awful trips where nothing went right, and Ramon Dominguez rode him, and I'll never forget, you know, we were in a race that we thought we could win. Everything went wrong, and I think the horse finished fourth or fifth, and he just had a horrible trip. Ramon came back. It was a real hot day, and I still remember he come off the scales, and we were walking through the grandstand, and he had sweat all over him, and it was hot, and he looked up at me, and he says, "Michael, I'm so sorry. That was as bad as it gets." And there was nothing to be said. It was just an awful trip. The owner was adamant. He said, this is a good horse. He says, I want you to run him in the Arctic Stakes and in Canada, get him ready for that race. I think he's good enough to win that race. I thought it was a stretch, but it was his horse. And, you know, and that he was very deliberate in what he wanted to do. And lo and behold, he went up there and Ramon was able to ride him and he won.
Yeah, incredible. That's a great story. How about last year in the Highlander with Wet Your Whistle?
That horse is a cool story. You know, he was a $17,000 yearling, and now he's a Grade 1 winner. Doesn't get any better than that.
No, that's what this sport's all about. You know, I say it a lot. This is a game that's built on hopes and dreams, and to have a horse like that, a modest-priced horse, to say the least, to go on and win a Grade 1, that's a very difficult thing to do, Mike, and kudos to you for taking him to that level.
Thank you. Thank you. And the owners, you know, they were very supportive of them. They only own a few horses at a time. And for them to get that opportunity, I'm sure it's one of those their life experiences that they'll never forget.
Well, Mike, we've got about 2 minutes left here. Again, going to replay this entire interview coming up in the second half of the show. But before we get to the break, is there a moment or two maybe that you could share real quickly that when you think back on these 1,800-plus wins, that kind of stands out to you outside of the horses we've talked about?
It's been so many over the years, it's hard to say. You know, the days where we've had a few days where we won three on a card or something like that, they're always kind of special because, you know, you go home with a great feeling that, man, we had a great day. The big races, they're special as well, but we're still striving to get to even the bigger ones. You know, I would love to have the opportunity to win one of these classics or Breeders' Cup. I just don't know if everybody truly understands how difficult and challenging it is and all the things that it takes to get there. It makes you appreciate what we do each and every day that much more.
Yeah, very well said. Mike Trombetta here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Mike, want to wish you all the best with your entire stable and certainly Independence Hall as you begin to make your way down that road to Louisville again. Good luck with him. Let's go get that classic here in 2020.
All right, thank you very much.
All right, thanks for all the time, Mike. Appreciate it. Again, busy day for Mike. He couldn't spend the full hour, but he did give us that wonderful 30 minutes, and somebody who works so hard, has had so much success. You heard him say at the top of the show, he was working two jobs for 15 years when he was building his stable. Able to finally go out on his own, and things are clicking right now for Mike Trombetta and that entire team. Maryland's 2019 Trainer of the Year. Congrats to Mike, and my thanks to him for taking the time here on Trainer Talk. Stay with me, a replay of that entire interview coming up in the second half of the show. For now, I want to thank my producer, Lee Delapina. I'm Mike Penna, coming to you from our Lexington, Kentucky studios here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. The Fasig Tipton Gulfstream Sale is hotter than ever. The nation's premier two-year-olds in training sale is now accepting nominations for the 2020 sale. In 2019, the sale recorded a record average, record median, and sold more horses for $1 million or more than any other two-year-old sale in North America, including a $3.65 million sale topper that was the most expensive two-year-old sold in North America since 2006. Nominate today, the Fasig Tipton Gulfstream Sale, April 1st, 2020, at Gulfstream Park. Where will you be?
Bloom Racing. Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others, Midnight Bizou leaves no doubt today. She won the Phipps in hand.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now, get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
time-tested Broken Vow continues to deliver quality black-type stakes horses at a 15% clip. The top son of Unbridled has sired over 150 black-type horses, 80 black-type winners, and over $75 million in earnings. Among the 12 black-type horses sired by Broken Vow in 2019 was dual Canadian Classic winner Tone Broke, winner of classic races on dirt and turf. Also the sire of Imprimis, the Speedy Keeneland graded stakes winner of over $440,000. Give your mare a great start with a proven sire, Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Make Woodbine the place to train and race your thoroughbred in 2020. The Woodbine Backstretch is equipped with a 1 mile dirt training track and a 7 furlong turf training track. Racing surfaces include a 1 mile all-weather Tapeta main track, a 7 furlong inner turf course, and the 1.5 mile E.P. Taylor turf course. Opening day is April 18th, the Queen's Plate June 27th, Woodbine Mile Weekend September 19th and 20th, and the Pattison Canadian International, now a $1 million purse, on Sunday, October 19th. Visit Woodbine.com/incentives for the full stakes schedule and more information.